This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You're listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell.
Plus the cow.
Plus the cow, indeed.
It's good, isn't it? Minus the bell, plus the cow.
Let's talk some tennis. The ever inconsistent Nick Kyrgios, I often call him John McEnroe without the results. He continued to frustrate his fans last night after losing his opening game at the Montreal, despite his City Open win last week, for fans in the UK, there was some consolidation, though, as the man who beat him in straight sets was British number one, Kyle Edmund.
And, of course, we've got Uche Amarco on the line, our tennis expert and a very good friend of the show. Uche, good morning to you.
Morning, gents. How are we?
How are you, mate? You see how confident I'm in saying your name now? It flows, Uche. It just flows. Well, I was struggling at first. It flows. How are you, my friend? You enjoying the tennis?
Yes, I'm good. I stayed up overnight to watch that, and it was a really good performance from Carl.
Listen, before we get to the tennis, Kyrgios made more headlines yesterday for shouting at the umpire. I mean, an incorrect towel. I mean, why is his discipline, you know, so poor?
That is the million-dollar question. You'd think, having won in Washington last week, he'd come in on a high. Everyone's talking about him. Everybody's coming to see him. And then within a few games, he's moaning about some towels and he's moaning to the umpire about it. What can the umpire do?
Yeah.
You know, just sort of get your head down, get yourself settled in, which, I mean, he wasn't broken early on, so he was well into the match with Carl. But then he just seemed to get himself distracted. And once he's distracted, his head goes all over the place and... Credit to Carl, he took full advantage.
Hi, Uche, it's Cal here. On that matter there... Kyrgios is quite outspoken saying that he doesn't like tennis. He wants to be a basketball player. That's what he wants to do. Does he need to do what, say, like his fellow Australian Ashley Barty did? Because she went to go and play cricket for a while, got that out of her system, came back, and is playing some of the best tennis she's ever played. Does Nick need to do this? Does he need to go to basketball and realise how much better he is at tennis and maybe rediscover a love for tennis?
Yeah.
Well, I mean... I don't think he likes tennis. He likes basketball, but I don't think he's that good that he's going to play at any type of sort of real top quality level. So if he did say, OK, I'm going to drop tennis, I'm going to try basketball, I don't think he'd come back. I think he'd just say, well, the basketball didn't work. I don't really like tennis. Let me just go and do nothing now. Go and play video games. I don't think he'd come back. The longer we've got him playing tennis and creating stories despite... all of the hysteria and attention he creates, the better.
Yeah, I mean, let's go on to Kyle Edmund. He's had a hell of a draw to open this tournament. He beat Kyrgios, but then finds himself up against Medvedev. How do you say his name?
Medvedev.
Medvedev,
I do apologise, yeah. Is his form good enough to beat him, do you reckon?
Well, his form isn't good at the moment. I mean, he's only had one semi-final this year so far after an impressive year last year. So you'd say going into this match, Medvedev is definitely the favourite. But you have to think that beating Nick Kyrgios will give him some confidence. But Medvedev has been one of the form players this year. He's got a really, really solid game. So it's going to be a tough test for Carl later today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I just want to touch on Kyrgios one more time, actually. Because when on his day, he can beat anybody. Let's have a look at the Wimbledon this year. He had a fantastic match against Rafa Nadal. And he's beaten Rafa on a number of occasions. Is he going to have any form of... Is there going to be any excitement of Nick Kyrgios at the US Open? Is he going to be able to perhaps get to a final at some point? Not specifically just the US Open, but any Grand Slam at all?
Show a bit more consistency.
Yeah. With the way Nadal, Federer and Djokovic are still dominating, it would be a massive surprise if we see Nick Kyrgios in a final anytime soon, because... obviously, over the 2 weeks, you need to win seven matches.
Yeah.
And he's shown that he can win four or five matches in a regular tournament. But seven matches over 2 weeks, potential five sets every time.
Yeah.
That's another level of intensity and your mentality and thinking has to be completely different. And he's not shown that at all at a Grand Slam yet. He's had a few good wins in the first round, second round, but going into the second week has been very, very rare for him. So I wouldn't be, pin my hopes too much on him getting into a grandstand final. But if he can do well in these smaller tournaments, it will help with some of his ranking and his seeding when he gets to the big tournament. Therefore, he plays theoretically easier players in the early rounds, giving him a better chance. And then once he can perhaps get to those fourth round, quarterfinals, semifinals, and plays these big boys where he rises to the occasion, then he can give himself an opportunity. But it's all about his mentality, really.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, I think it was Stefanos Tsitsipas who said at Wimbledon, he said, it's up to us to beat these top three guys. It's up to the next gen to be able to beat these guys. It's not for us to wait for them to step aside. And then you have Tsitsipas and Zverev both losing in the first round of Wimbledon. But Zverev is another frustrating player, actually. After he got to the ATP Finals victory, he was expected to kick on, be the next big thing, so to speak, but he's had off-field problems, but could this hard court season possibly reignite something in him?
Well, as the 10-10 fans have to hope, because we really need to be thinking about where is tennis going to go once again Federer, Nadal, Djokovic finally decide to hang up their rackets, and the next best are the likes of Dominic Thiem, Tsitsipas, Zverev and Kyrgios. But you'd almost have to put an asterisk onto their name once those three big guys retired and these next generations like winning Grand Slams, in that they could only win once they retired. You know, they didn't show enough when those big guys were still there to show that they could be at their level.
Well, with that in mind, we had Olga Aliassime outclass Tsitsipas earlier on at Queens with Zverev and Medvedev. And these are the names to be touted the next big thing, as you say. So who will it be, in your opinion?
I think, obviously, Dominic Thiem's the closest. He's gone to back-to-back French Open finals. I really like the look of Tsitsipas. I think he's got a real lovely game to watch. He's got the looks as well. He's flamboyant, he's got an interesting story, but he's actually dedicated to the game as well, which I think is one of the most critical things.
Is Dimitrov in that mix for you?
Absolutely not. Dimitrov has had a real bad year.
Consistently had a bad year.
he's completely lost his way since he won the ATP Tour Finals, I think in 2017 maybe, I think he won it. He's completely lost his way, inexplicably, really, because he's outrageously talented as well. But I think he's just not been able to also show the same level of focus and improve as well as much as he should have done.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Felix Auger-Aliassime won at home in Montreal yesterday, but fellow Canadian Popsil took it to a third set, and he wasn't really convincing until the final set tiebreak up against another Canadian, Raonic, next. How do you rate his chances up against the big server?
Well, obviously, Auger-Aliassime is definitely one of the most exciting talents in the tennis tour at the moment. And he struggled yesterday. I think obviously he's from Montreal, and it was a packed-out crowd. It's an incredible atmosphere out there in Canada. So I think that may have played a part in some of the nerves. It wasn't the greatest of matches. Both players made too many errors. To be fair, but I think he can continue. If he can get through Raonic as well, another compatriot of his, then he can go far again. He's really looked impressive in the big events this year. So if he can hang with Raonic there, I see no reason why he can't get deep into the tournament.
It's surprising that Raonic hasn't done more, and it's quite interesting how the big serve is coming back into tennis with Kevin Anderson, Raonic. John Isner's had a strong serve for a very, very long time. Why do you think that the strong serve and volley style of play is coming back into a popular way to play?
Probably because the court speeds are increasingly slower. So they're allowed to, once when they bomb their first serve down, the ball comes back, not with as much pace as it would have done in the past, and they're able to dominate. But with the big serves and the heights, they, as good as that is, they are deficient in terms of their movement and their technical quality, especially defensively. And that's if you can't defend, if your movement is not top notch, you aren't going to be able to compete for the highest honors. And that's what, especially Djokovic, is arguably the greatest ever at that. His defensive skills are
He's probably unparalleled. The only person he's probably second to is perhaps Murray, and I still think Djokovic just takes it.
Yeah. Murray was also incredible at always making the opponent play another ball, and it just gives you another chance. It raises the possibility that they could make a mistake, and that's all it takes, though, especially in those key moments.
Okay. I've got to ask you, my friend, and we always talk about Murray. What do you think? Is he going to come back as strong as he was? I personally don't think he will, but what do you reckon?
I'm not sure if he'll come back and be as good as he was before, but I think he's more than capable of getting back into the top 10. It'll take some time, but I think he's more than capable.
But for somebody like Murray, I don't know about you, Cal, but I don't... You're Andy Murray.
That's great.
What do you reckon, Andy? Are you going to come back as strong?
Well, my hip really hurts. I'd like to help things. I think it's great.
But he's been playing. He's playing again with Feliciano Lopez, isn't he?
Yeah, he's playing this week in the doubles with Feliciano Lopez. Obviously, they won in Queens last week, and they won overnight. Held over by the rain, but they won overnight. So that's good for them. They're still 100% record playing together, and I think he just needs to stay patient, keep trying to improve. Longer matches will help in terms of his endurance as well for when he then eventually steps into playing singles matches. So I think we can't put too much expectation on him right now on Andy. Yeah. It's still very early days.
Mm. Let's have a quick look on the women's side. Who are you impressed with? I mean, Osaka, Halep, Svitolina. Halep, of course, is the Wimbledon champion. Pliskova's still looking very good too. Who are you impressed with on the women's draw?
Well, yesterday, Ashley Barty crashed out in the first round to Sophia Kenin, which was a massive shock. Obviously, Kenin, she beat Serena Williams in the French Open, so that was a big surprise. And now that... Barty's number one rank is in danger.
Is she doing an Osaka then? Is this what's happening?
That'd be a bit harsh, I think. but it's a fair question to ask, because obviously she lost early in Wimbledon as well. Another early exit here again. So she really needs to pick up some form going into the US Open, because again, her game seemed ideally suited for a hard court. So it's a surprise that she would suffer an early defeat. However, the women's game is so close at the moment. Everyone's capable of beating each other at the moment.
So who's the favourite on that? Tell you what, who's the favourite and who's your pick, Uche?
I like the look of Osaka this week. She's saying all the right things, and she's obviously struggled since winning the Australian Open, but she's talked about how her confidence and mood has been, but and it's how it's improved going onto the hard courts. She loves playing on hard courts, so I think this will be a prime moment for her to stamp her authority back on the women's game.
Uche, thank you very, very much for coming on to the Bell and Sperling Show.
Yes, thank you very much, Uche.
Uche Amarco there, tennis writer for The Express. You're listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell.
Plus the cow.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
The debate over a location for the Ruiz Joshua rematch continues. The Mexican beat AJ in April in one of the biggest shocks in recent history.
On the line, we have friend of the show, Wally Downs Jr., Sun Boxing reporter. Good morning to you, Wally. How are you doing?
Morning, fellas. I'm all right. How are you?
Yes, very good. Thanks, Wally. Listen, Lennox Lewis said that AJ should fight in Mexico, where Ruiz Jr. is from. Joshua should at least go back to America, where he lost his belt. Shouldn't he?
Well, Eddie Hearn told us that that's what AJ wanted, but I tend to think that AJ and it's AJ's team are desperate for him to have this fight as close to home as humanly possible for all the natural home advantages that you have. I mean, don't forget, this is likely to be a December fight, and you're talking about an opponent who's Mexican raised in California. You know, it doesn't sound like much, but having to acclimatise and train and live and eat in a much, much colder place will be very alien to Ruiz. So every little advantage will count. You know, if AJ's got a completely partisan crowd on his side, then often if he throws a jab that doesn't look like much, but if the crowd roar, then suddenly the judges at ringside think, aye, aye, maybe that was a better shot than it looked to the eye. So I think AJ's team are desperate for home advantage. That then means that they'll have to pay Andy Ruiz or offer him, you know, a better percentage than what they would like. So that's where the haggling comes into play. And I think that they are desperate for it to be as close to home as possible, and I think, you know, that's probably, you know, that is really the least of AJ's worries, really.
Yeah. I mean, listen, just we'll go on somewhere else in a minute, but just quickly, the last thing on that, can he beat Ruiz next time? I mean, do you think AJ's going to beat him, or is it going to be an embarrassment again?
I really don't know.
Because it would be, wouldn't it, Wally? It would be an embarrassment if AJ goes there and he clubs him again and down he goes.
I think he's got so much to improve and change in such a short space of time.
Yeah.
I expect Ruiz to be... And the only thing that I suppose AJ and his team and all of his fans can hope for is that Ruiz has achieved his childhood dream. He's bought a lovely big mansion. He's been partying all over the place.
Yeah.
And that he comes back even bigger and even more useless. I've got a funny feeling. I mean, I thought he was really clever in the build-up to the first fight where he acted like a bozo and a fanboy.
Yes.
I've got a funny feeling.
Yeah.
He may even be doing that again because all his social media posts are him showing off. And I would love him to turn up looking even better and put in an even better performance.
Yeah.
Hi, Wally, it's Cal here. Do you not think that it was a lose-lose situation for AJ going into this fight? Because if he lost, as he did, he's lost and it's a bit of an embarrassment. But if he'd won, they would have gone, well, he only had three weeks to prepare to it and he looks like he put the ring up. He's not a boxer, do you know what I mean? Was it not a lose-lose situation for AJ?
No, not really. I think everyone was so impressed with Ruiz in the first fight that he's getting the respect that he deserves. I think a lot of people forgot that he fought Joseph Parker when he was the WBO champion in New Zealand, and for my money, he won on points and was robbed in New Zealand, which is probably why, you know, another reason why AJ wants to have this as close to home as possible. These decisions can help. So
yeah.
Ruiz deserved a lot of credit. You know, none of us thought that he would be the man to do that to AJ in that fashion. But he's a much better boxer than a lot of people thought that he was. And, you know, the shape of him was just so deceiving.
Let's go over to the heavyweight division now. We've got to talk about Tyson Fury's next opponent, Otto Wallin. Who is he?
He's a big Swedish southpaw. His record, again, very much like Tom Schwartz, his record looks great, but the problem is when you look at the quality of opponents. The 20 opponents that he's boxed have probably lost maybe 270 fights. So we're talking about a guy who's been knocking over, you know, no ones really. What I find most odd is that if his early 2020 rematch with Wilder is nailed on and is going to happen, then why is he fighting a southpaw who's not really a big puncher?
If I
was fighting a 6'7" haymaker throwing, you know, unorthodox boxer, I would fancy boxing a very similar one. And that's what Frank Warren, his UK promoter, and Bob Arum, his American promoter, were telling us all. That's why someone like Jarrell Miller, you know, even with a drugs ban, was being talked about because he was a pretty ideal, an ideal warm up.
Let me tell you, Wally, you know, if
a southpaw's no good.
If I was fighting a 6'7" boxer, I'd be hiding in the cupboard.
I think Tyson's so good he can beat them all single handedly. But you know, we look back on the history of boxers and we look at their records, and he might be the most talented heavyweight we've ever seen. Mm. But when you look through his records and we see the Safiris and the Pianettas and the Otto Wallins and the Tom Schwartzes, you know, that's going to tarnish his record. As brilliant as he may well be and as brilliant as the Klitschko was and the Wilder performance with almost no training or build-up, you know, right now he's robbing fans, but, you know, maybe he's earned the right to.
It is the question in the back of every boxing fan's mind. Is this Wilder-Fury rematch ever going to happen? What do you think, Wally?
I think it's part of this huge ESPN deal that he has signed. I don't think it's as much as £80 million as we were told. I think ESPN are quite keen for us to not say it was £80 million, but they're not kind enough to tell us what the real figure is. So I understand why people keep saying it. But Wilder is part of that, and I imagine it's at least two fights with Wilder, because whoever wins the rematch, it will then only be 1-0 to someone with a draw. So there's at least two fights in it. And if they're successful enough, you know, once he gets Wilding out of the way, it could be 3 Wilder fights that we're looking at. And that way they can freeze out the DAZN, the Anthony Joshua side of things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If we stay with the Fury family, Tommy might be quitting boxing after he had a bit of a stint on Love Island and he had success on that. He hasn't had many professional bouts, but is that a waste of a talent?
To be honest, I suppose they're prize fighters, isn't it? They're there to make money. Mm. And just before Love Island, I read an article about the money that they'd made, and even the unpopular ones you don't really remember seem to be able to nick £2-4 million for posing for stuff and going in other TV shows. So it depends how much he likes to get chinned. I mean, he's got a great physique and he's a really lovely kid. But I don't know. I mean, the great thing about it, now that he's done that, he could probably headline a show at Manchester Arena tomorrow. Yeah.
You're right.
And, you know, someone like Josh Warrington needed 20 fights to reach that level. So if he wanted to box, he'd be more or less, you know, a headline draw tomorrow. But if he also fancied jacking it in, then he's got a nice, easy life as well.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about another big fight later this month. Lomachenko and Campbell is happening at the O2. Does Campbell have any chance in this one?
I hope so. I really do hope so, because he's had a horrible run of results. Again, someone else, last time he had a world title challenge, he went to America and fought Linares, more or less in his adopted backyard, and was really unlucky on a split decision that I thought he could have been given. And the earlier loss he suffered in his career was when his dad was very, very ill. So he's someone, again, you know, won gold at the Olympics, a bit overshadowed by AJ, and for me was nailed on to be a world champion by now. He's already in his early 30s, and it just hasn't happened. Such a skilled, beautiful boxer and a lovely fella. And again, you know, he shouldn't have been fighting Lomachenko for this WBC title. He was the mandatory challenger. The belt become vacant. He should have been fighting someone who was maybe 2, 3, 4. And instead, the WBC just threw Lomachenko in because they want him to hold the belt because he's so good. So if he can pull it off, it'll be incredible. My only worry is he's such a brilliant, technical, amateur, pedigreed southpaw. Mm. He's more or less exactly what Lomachenko is. So Lomachenko's had 400 amateur fights. He would have seen lots of, you know, Luke Campbell, the likes of Luke Campbell, whereas I think the only people who might beat Lomachenko, like his first ever pro opponent did, Salido, is to beat him up, rough him up, and just be something completely different. And that's not in Luke, really. I just worry he's more or less tailor-made for Loma.
Right. I mean, what does Luke Campbell have to do differently to Anthony Crowder in this fight? I mean, will we see him change his style a bit?
I don't think so. I mean, those two are complete chalk and cheese. Crowder, I mean, I thought Crowder had the wrong game plan anyway. More or less, I thought he was going to... I think Crowder should have gone in there and tried to rough him up. And I know it's ugly and it's not attractive and it wouldn't have been a picture and fans might not have loved it. But I think Crowder should have gone in and tried to overpower him, be bigger, be ugly, maybe even lose a point on a foul. And you're dealing with someone who's such an elite, elite talent. Now, there's no way that Luke Campbell is going to do that. But he's a really big lightweight. He's tall and he's strong. I do worry a little bit that obviously Shane McGuigan, his coach, has also tragically, really tragically lost his sister. Mm. So that's sort of, again, another tragedy that's affected his, perhaps has affected his camp. Hopefully it hasn't had too much of an impact. But he's a brilliant boxer, a brilliant southpaw. He's heavy-handed as well. I mean, it would be great if he can drag Loma into a contest where he hasn't really had to go that far. You know, he's made fighters quit. When they stood together, I was at the Talk Sport Towers a little while ago and they stood next to each other and they went face to face. He's got sort of maybe 3, 4, 5 inches on him, you know, and he's wider. He's got big, long shoulders. Mm. Loma looks like a tiny little fella. It just shows how skillful he is.
Yeah, and Wally, finally, we have to talk about Carl Frampton as well. He pulled out of the Dominguez fight after an ornament fell on his hand. He's 32 years old. A boxer with a hand injury, is that his career over?
No, I don't think so. He's another one who's just been signed up by ESPN, so he was going to be really, really well paid for that night's work against, you know, he was expected to fly through that Dominguez fight. It was a bit of a tune-up, bit of an easy one for him. So I think I've seen that his hand should take 4 or 5 weeks to heal. He will get another world title shot. He's a good earner, Carl. He's got the whole of Ireland, North and South behind him, but very much like Barry McGuigan did, who was one of his early mentors. So I imagine once he gets healed up, he'll either be thrown in for another world title shot or he'll have a little tune-up. But, I mean, I would have been more than happy to see him retire after the Warrington defeat, but he still feels he's got plenty in him, and I think he's a great fighter, and I think he'll come back and finish his career off with one more world title shot.
Yeah. Well, Wally, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Wally Downs Jr. there, some boxing reporter. Thank you very much indeed. Enjoy your day. Let's say it before we go to the break.
Yes. You're listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell.
Plus the cow.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
We are joined in the studio with producer Laurie. Producer Laurie, welcome to the studio.
Welcome to the studio,
you're
Laurie.
You're normally on the other side of the glass.
He is. I thought I'd keep you in check, or try to.
Oh, you are, aren't you? You've told me off a few times today, Laurie. You're a very naughty boy, and I'm 30 years older than you.
If not, a bit more.
If not a bit more. Oh, cheeky, isn't
handbags at dawn, gentlemen. Put it down. Nick Kyrgios is what you've come in to talk about, yeah. Producer Laurie. I regularly call Nick Kyrgios the John McEnroe without results.
Without results, yeah. Is that a bit harsh? A bit harsh.
I think it's slightly harsh. It's obviously not harsh in terms of what he's won, because he, for his talent, hasn't won anything really of note. The point is, though, he definitely is talented, and that's why he's such a frustrating player, because on his day, he can outclass pretty much any player.
Yeah. Anybody.
We saw him absolutely embarrass Nadal at one stage at Wimbledon. He was great there. And then, obviously, last week at the City Open, he played his best tennis for a while, and we thought, maybe, finally...
Asking the crowd, where shall I put it and all that.
I know, I love that. Go over to the front of the crowd.
Where'd you want it? He took his phone out to make sure he thanked everybody as well.
Did he really? That was nice, the notes
on his phone.
That's the thing. You thought you saw a little bit of maturity there from Nick Kyrgios that we haven't seen before. You didn't think that years ago he would have even... remembered to thank everyone.
He wouldn't have thanked anybody.
I was having a chat with someone and they were saying it's really nice to think of him, like, just thinking about everyone he was going to thank and write it down, because that's just so out of character for him. And obviously when it's good, his character is, you know, a pro.
Yeah.
But obviously, as we saw yesterday, with him complaining about the towels...
That spoils it a bit for me. Why is he so consistent, though? I mean,
well, I think one of the main parts is that when he comes out with this attitude, it more often hinders him than helps him, because he gets so obsessed with, you know, complaining at the umpires, and he kind of makes himself play worse. And that was why last week when he was playing at the City Open and he was playing really good tennis, and it did look like he'd kind of... had the right balance and he had the composure, and we saw him serve out against Tsitsipas very convincingly. You know, he put in some really good performances, and I just think it's a shame, because you really want, every time he just has a good... He also won in Acapulco at the same time. We thought, yeah, maybe he's going to kick on now, and with the hard season coming up, hard court season, you think, if he just put a bit of a run together.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why he's inconsistent, because he maybe distracts himself, doesn't he? And puts himself off his game.
Well, absolutely. I kind of hoped, actually, as a Kyrgios fan, I really wanted him to maybe miss this week in Montreal, because he'd had such a good week. I understand why he played it, but he's probably now going to have to miss Cincinnati. Obviously, he'll get a break now from not playing any more games.
How old is he, by the way?
He's 24, 25.
He's still young, isn't he? Maybe he's got to get this bit out of him. You know, the frustration 24. And the, you know, the McEnroe-esque style. And maybe he will calm down in a couple of years.
And that's the other thing. You talk about these young players like the Tsitsipases, the Medvedevs, the Ojer Aliassimes, even, who are coming through. Zverev obviously has been disappointing for other reasons, but there are these young players who are touted as the people who maybe could finally take over from Rafa Nadal, Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, Murray to a lesser extent.
Dimitrov was supposed to be the next best player.
Of course, Dimitrov's 28 odd now, so it's a shame he doesn't seem to quite have made
it as he was expected to.
But all these young players, and Nick Kyrgios doesn't get mentioned alongside those, and that's not because anyone questions his talent. As a tennis player, he has it all. The shots he can play are ridiculous. We've all seen his underarm serve, which frustrates people. But there's another serve that he sometimes brings out where he goes to serve, he literally throws it up as if he's coming in for the over on serve. And at the last minute, he sort of slices it and just drops it over the net like a drop shot. It's a really impressive shot. If you see him do it, nobody else on the tour tries that shot.
He can do things
that other players can't do. But the reason that he's not talked about alongside these other young players who are coming through is because he's just never had that consistency. And
we speak about, and a lot of sports broadcasters talk about Nick Kyrgios all the time, and I don't actually like giving him any airtime because I don't care for the man.
Oh, really? You're not a fan of him at all?
Because I'd happily talk about Nick Kyrgios if we were talking about how great of a player he is all the time. But we're always talking about him being a brat, him shouting, him breaking rackets, him being a pain in the backside for everybody.
He does have flashes of brilliance, though, doesn't he?
Of course he does. Yeah. And that's what frustrates me, as you were saying before, Laurie. It's so frustrating watching him because he is clearly such a great tennis player and a really, really, really brilliant tennis player. I nearly said a square word. I was that passionate about it. It's just he's a child,
don't you think that sometimes, you know, a little bit of entertainment's what we need? No. You know, it's so straight down the line with Federer.
When it becomes frustrating is when it's to his detriment as a player, because the hype gets to a certain level. Yeah. We saw him win last week. He was amazing. This is why I said it maybe would have been good if he just missed the next tournament, because he just has to kind of reset. But he gets to a point where he loses the balance and he lets his attitude take over. Mm. And let's be honest, Carl Edmund, he's the British number one. He's the British number one because Andy Murray had a career-threatening injury.
Yes.
You know, obviously that's hard for him because you can't just expect to be as good as Andy Murray.
No.
But at the same time, a player like Nick Kyrgios should be expecting to beat Kyle Edmund relatively easily.
Particularly on hard court.
Particularly in the first round after he's just won. Mm-hmm. In the same part of the world, on the same type of court.
Yeah.
I still feel like he could surprise a few people at the US Open. I'd love to see Nick Kyrgios get to a semi-final, perhaps. Right. I think it's really hard to look past Djokovic still.
And Federer, really.
Yeah.
And Nadal.
And also, obviously, Zverev, who's had off-court issues, but, you know, still has that talent there. And if there's a time that Zverev's going to come out and really build on his success from the ATP Finals a couple of years ago, then the time that that's going to be is on the hard court season, and he could also make a splash at the US Open.
I think Kyrgios could be the player that upsets Djokovic or upsets Nadal or Federer. I think he could be that player, but I think it would be in early rounds. I'd have to look at the draws and stuff.
Just Pete Kyrgios. You expect him to beat someone who amazing and then probably lose in the next round.
That's what I mean. He'll thrash Djokovic somehow 6-2, 6-2, 6-2 and then the following lose straight sets with a bagel probably. Do you know what I mean? It's just how he plays, isn't it? It's infuriating.
Yeah.
I know you're into a tennis, Carl. I was just wondering, we've talked a lot about these young players. From your perspective, who do you think is this next young player who's actually going to break in? I personally think Felix Auger-Aliassime looks incredible. He's a little bit younger than the others. He's Canadian. He hasn't quite been that successful, but I mean, he absolutely played Tsitsipas off the park earlier this year at Queens, and he just looks like, on his day, he could really upset anybody.
I agree. However, I just hope, and I also put Coco Gauff on the women's side, who upset Venus Williams in the first round at Wimbledon this year, the 15-year-old. I put her in the same bracket as Felix Auger-Aliassime in that I hope that they get the right team around them and they haven't just had a good burst this year.
Yeah, that's what I said, actually.
I really, really hope, because they have both got the potential to be world number ones, and I think you're absolutely right with Auger-Aliassime. I think he can certainly be one to watch. And I mean, I still really like Tsitsipas. I think he's a very, very good player. He's got a level head on him, and Zverev throws his toys at the pram quite a lot in saying that, oh, these guys should retire, whereas Tsitsipas says, why should they retire? They're still winning. They're still winning these Grand Slams. They're still winning these tournaments. Why should they retire? It's down to us to beat them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Tsitsipas. He's had, like Zverev, he's had a really odd year. They both kind of have odd agents and things. But Tsitsipas started the year really well, did well at Grand Slams. He's kind of faded. But he clearly is a massive talent as well, and I wouldn't be surprised if he did well. The reason that I kind of disagree with you on Felix Auger-Aliassime in terms of the Coco Gauff comparison is that difference in the juniors from 15 to 18 really does make a difference. Like, there's no denying Coco Gauff's got a lot of talent.
But
Ojeda Aliassime has proved himself in the juniors, you know. Mm. Like, if you compare him alongside Tsitsipas, who's 1 or 2 years older than him, he had a 2-0 record against Tsitsipas in the juniors, and he's now improved on that, of course. He's 3 or 4-0. So I just think that he's proven himself, and a lot of the way that the top players did, like Djokovic coming through, there's quite a lot of similarities with the way that Djokovic came through to the way that Ojeda Aliassime's coming through into the seniors.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really interesting point. I think it's actually, it'd be interesting to get your opinion of Coco Gauff, actually, because they've got to the point where she now needs to choose, because she can't play on the juniors tour anymore, can she? There's a mix-up in the
yeah,
way...
Why is that?
Well, yeah, Federer actually was calling for a rule change because if you're a certain age, then you're only allowed to play a certain number of games. It's kind of for the player's own good, for the young player's own
good to protect
them, essentially.
Yeah, it is a well-being thing, isn't it?
A certain number of games a year. But obviously then there's the argument, if you've got someone who is that good when they're that young, and Coco Gauff already could get further than in Grand Slams than a lot of people who are fully fledged on the tour, then obviously that debate's going to be there. But I don't necessarily see there being a rule change, because 15 is young. I would say about Coco Gauff's play is, the one thing I love about her is that shot, and you don't see it from many players, but she plays a forehand and it looks like it's going to loop way beyond the baseline. It's like a massive shot that flies and then
dips.
Somehow it does dip and it lands just before the baseline.
It's incredible.
It's all about the backspin.
She hits
all about
so many
backspin.
Winners like that.
It's amazing, yeah.
She'll
yeah.
be a top player.
Top Absolutely. Player. Producer Laurie, thank you very, very much indeed.
He's not going far. He's going to open the door and go on the outside of the glass.
He is indeed.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell.
And plus the cow.
Oh, fabulous.
And plus the posh boy.
The posh boy, Johnny Borrow.
Hello, lads.
Oh, I love you. Oh, look at him. Oh, God, I love him. I can't help it.
Is the door locked or can I still go?
How many people call you Johnny Burrows?
A lot. The Burrows plural. I just very sarcastically go, there's only one of me, actually. Which does lead to me losing friends, but there we go.
You're always losing friends. Johnny, I called you Johnny Burrows at first.
You've never called me Johnny. I think that was the first time you've ever called me Johnny. Five seconds ago was the first time you've done that.
I never call you Johnny.
Posh boy?
I can't.
Hello, posh boy.
He's posh boy for me.
I only came out for a loaf of bread. Hello, posh boy.
Producer Laurie is coming to the studio.
Producer Laurie is here.
We're playing a game, aren't we? For a loaf of bread. Can we call the game For a Loaf of Bread?
If you want, it's better than what Johnny came up with yesterday.
Games with Laurie.
Not the best.
Games with Laurie. I just couldn't think of anything. It just came out.
What's the game, Laurie?
What we got for?
I don't know if you've seen this story today, but essentially the story is that Camera, which is the campaign for real ale, have basically given up. They're getting rid of names.
They get rid of names
beers that are sexist.
Right, okay.
So there are plenty of, you know, all these craft beers have names.
Yeah.
Did I forget to put my mic on? There are plenty of craft beers, essentially, that have names that aren't very modern, should we say.
Right, okay. Not
necessarily appropriate. Give us an example.
So one of the ones that is an example that they said was Slack Alice, and they called it Slack Alice because it was a little tart. Now... I think as a room full of white men, we can agree that it is a good thing that they're getting rid of these names.
Rubbish.
Okay. Well, let's move on from that.
It's great.
The game that I've devised, along with Posh Boy, I'm going to basically read out some names of craft beers.
Okay.
Hopefully non-sexist ones. And you're going to have to guess whether they're real or not.
Okay.
So like yesterday, you'll each get one. In turn,
that's good.
We haven't got to guess what it is, just if it's real or not.
Just if it's real.
True or false?
More of a chance with this one, 50-50.
For a loaf of bread.
Latin required.
Okay. All right, then. Okay.
Do you want to go first again, John?
Go on, then. I'm in.
All right. Your first one is Duck Duck Booze.
Duck Duck Booze.
Comically bad.
Duck Booze. I think it's real.
Yeah, I agree.
It is real.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm glad that I didn't make that one up.
Duck, duck, booze.
Duck, duck, booze.
I like that it doesn't quite work. That's what I like about
it. You made some up of you two. Come on, let's hear them.
Okay, so this one's for you, Cal. Halbert.
Nation's favourite.
Upper Yeast Side.
Upper Yeast Side. Oh. Upper Yeast Side. See, that sounds quite boring. So it could quite plausibly
be. So Laurie
be...
came up with it.
I'm going to say
there is a lot of craft beer in America.
There is, yeah. Upper Yeast Side. I'm going to say false.
You're right. That is false.
It is false. Did you make that one up?
Oh, I had to make some up.
Oh no, you did a good job.
that's one of my worst ones. Hopefully,
good. Yes. Good for you.
Upper Yeast Side. Not bad though.
Posh boy? Okay, posh boy. I literally never call him posh boy.
True
really
or
weird.
False? Is that a beer?
It's from one posh boy. Boy to another, isn't it?
Here's one for you. Robo-hop.
Oh, that's a good one.
Robo-hop. I don't think you're funny enough to have come up with that. Oh! So I'm going to say true.
I'm really sad that is true, yeah.
Good work. Yeah. I mean, Robo-hop's a brilliant good name.
This is why I'm a producer. I'm not made for air.
Let's go.
All right. We're back around to Johnny Sperling.
We haven't got one wrong yet, by the way.
Okay, all
right. Let's see if you can. You've done your job.
Games with Laurie.
Do you know what? It is going to be called that. Now I'm going to even do a jingle for it. Now it's time for Games with Laurie.
Okay, here's one for you. Similar to the last one, Audrey Hopburn.
Oh, that's a good name. That
Audrey Hopburn.
If that was a beer, I'd have that.
Now I'm trying to think if you're.
Please.
I'm trying to just think if you could come up with that. You know, you're a young guy. And...
Oh, he's definitely come up with that. I've got no... I don't know, but I'm...
You just... think that's a Laurie
Hopper. I think that's definitely Laurie.
I'm going to go with you, Posh Boy, but I don't think... I'm going that it's false.
That one's actually true.
Yeah! I knew it was! I'm not listening to you again!
You're celebrating.
I told
you're...
you, didn't I? I just didn't think you would come up with Audrey Hopburn.
It's mind games.
Notice, Johnny. Me and you haven't got one wrong yet.
I wouldn't have done had I not listened to him.
Okay, here's one for you, Cal.
Oh, God, here we go.
A Romeo and Juliet.
Oh. A Romeo and Juliet. Ooh, a Romeo and Juliet.
Don't you listen to him.
Do you know, it sounds so ridiculous, I'm going to say it's true.
That was actually false. I made it up.
Well done. Hey, you got one. You got that.
And it's very...
So hang on, if I can get one right, I'm in the lead. And also, Johnny Sperling, you jinxed this by saying we got them all right so far.
I didn't jinx it. You're the one that influenced me to go elsewhere. Now I'm going to try and put you off.
Okay, here's one for you.
Here we go.
This might be a Czech one. If looks good, pills.
If looks good, pills.
That's a good one. Well, that's a good one.
You know what? I don't think you came up with that either. I think that's a real beer.
That's also a fake beer.
Yeah! Oh! Laurie knocked it out of the park!
See, I just came in with my rubbish ones to start
Producer
with.
Producer Laurie has just knocked it out of the park. If look good, pills. That's brilliant. That's really good.
It's Johnny Sperling's fault. He's cursed this round.
He really has.
Okay. So we all got one wrong that round, didn't we?
Yeah, you brilliant. Did. So the scores are 1-1-1.
Brilliant.
All right.
Come on, here we go.
Next one.
Concentrate.
Johnny Sperling.
Yes. Why are they laughing like that?
Baby got Bock.
Pardon?
Baby got Bock.
Baby got what?
Bock.
Baby got Bock. Now that's
pardon.
That's got to be real.
It is real.
There we are.
It's real.
Had to be real. Very you know good. When you'd have thought that? Just because why would you think of that? Baby got Bock. What's the matter with you two?
You're just making me laugh a lot. I can't. That's very funny.
What's the matter with you?
Okay, here's him.
Look at him. He's a shimmering wreck.
Let's keep it going. All
yeah,
right.
Please.
Cal Halbert.
Yeah.
This one's got like two parts to it, okay. So it's got the name and then the explanation. So it's Little Teapot, which is a short ale stout.
Oh, that is good,
very good.
Little Teapot, a short ale stout. Gonna say true.
Made it up.
Oh,
that's a good one, Laurie.
That is brilliant, that Laurie. You are wasted. You're in the wrong job, mate. You've got to go and sign up for them.
Can I just say,
it's a brilliant.
I did come in and I was getting a lot of grief to start with.
You did.
That is a very good.
That
one.
That is so good. Say that again. What was it?
It's a Little Teapot, which is a short ale stout.
Oh, it's good.
That is good.
Isn't it good?
It's very good.
It's so good.
Okay, Johnny Burrow.
Yeah. And what are the scores on the doors? I'm behind.
2-1-1.
Yes, Burling's right. Actually winning.
Yeah, yeah.
It's concerning. Let's go.
So this one is
very concerning.
Citra Ass Down.
Pardon?
Citra, I think, as in...
Citra. That's true. That is a real beer.
You're right, that
is a
real
brilliant
beer.
One, isn't it? Citra S down. It's brilliant.
Okay, we're coming into the final round.
Okay. Here we go.
All right.
Ooh, we'll find out. You've been enjoying... good at this, Johnny. You've been really
I'm enjoying
good.
This.
So,
yeah.
This one's worth 5,000 points.
Cool.
Okay?
Yeah.
Johnny Sperling.
Yeah.
Your question is...
Yeah. I'm concentrating.
A little bitter Monica.
Excellent.
That is very good.
A little bitter Monica. Now, listen, I'm not going to even say that you could never think of that, because you've thought some brilliant ones. And they have been, haven't they? Very good.
Not what I'm laughing at.
What are you laughing at?
You.
Oh, shut up. I would say, though, I'm going to go with... That's false.
Is it false?
You've never.
It is false.
Oh! No!
Three.
You made that up.
Yes. How about that?
Lord above.
Brilliant.
You are in the wrong job here, Laurie.
So
that's 5,000 points.
You've been doing this for about a quarter of an hour.
And that was to your merit, because I thought he's clever enough to come up with that. And he was.
Okay, so that's 5,002 points now to Johnny Sperling.
I can't catch
Carl,
up.
You can't win, but, you know,
for pride.
You still could get 5,001 points, which is a pretty decent total.
Here we go.
Multi-towers.
Multi-towers, true.
No, made it up.
He's done you!
Absolutely
not.
He's done you! I've had a pint of multi-towers.
The thing is, I can imagine that one being real, but I haven't seen it anywhere in my research.
Okay.
So that is a caveat.
Research, are you at the pub?
I absolutely, as true as I'm saying, I've definitely had a pint of multi-towers.
Okay, well, we'll open that up to the listener.
Take that to the listener.
It wasn't very nice. It gave me a bad stomach.
Carl, you were denied one yesterday. You might be denied a win again today. Okay, final one. Johnny Burrow.
This is to tie.
And it may take you to a tie break.
I hope there's a tie break. Come on.
In fact, I hope it goes to the tie break.
Yeah, I hope so.
I say, tart side of the moon.
Oh,
it's so weirdly niche that it's got to be true.
That's right, it's true.
Oh, he's got it! Oh, we're going to a tie break. It's a tie break.
Listener, we are going to a tie break.
Yes.
Not that it means anything at all.
No, it
does. For a loaf of bread.
It does. It means a big posh boy.
Okay.
For a loaf of bread.
This one's for any fans of the Transformers movies out there.
Oh, I'm not.
And listen, the thing is...
Optimus Prime, isn't it?
It's Optimus Prime.
What do you mean?
If
because
Johnny's
Optimus
thought
Prime
of it,
has the obvious pun. He's made it up.
I've not got a clue.
He must have made it
what
up.
What Optimus Prime means?
He's the main Transformer in Transformers.
Is he? Mm. Are you a fan of Transformers?
No.
I've got a clue what you're talking about.
For the purpose of this tiebreak, you have to disagree.
I disagree.
Okay, I think that. So difficult.
Optimus Prime.
Bad for me. This is.
It's really good, but it's so good that Laurie Callis made it up. It's false.
And Johnny, what do you think? I've got to go true.
Hang on, this is not fair.
Johnny,
I don't even think...
what you want. You go where you want,
man. I think you should ask another question after this.
Well, Johnny,
this should be your question.
It was given.
It's a tiebreaker.
You can't have a tiebreaker on this particular sort of thing.
Johnny.
Yeah.
All right. Can I just say,
false.
You've won. It was true. Because you said true.
By default,
Ryan. By default, I've won. I beat Posh Boy.
Congratulations.
Very well done, Johnny Spur.
And also,
very well done.
And I must say, Laurie, producer Laurie, great game.
Thank you. Good game.
Good game.
Join Posh Boy on the drive after cricket as well. Stick around.
Hang on a second. That was a little bit random for everybody, wasn't it?
It was.
Join Posh Boy on after cricket.
After cricket. You're listening to the Bell and Sperling Show, minus the bell.
Plus the gal.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to Bell and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.